and we talked about that a minute ago. His father Ahaz had been paying protection money or tribute money to the Assyrians to keep them from marching into their huge army into Judah and just wiping the place out. Paying tribute money or protection money to the Assyrians, it revealed that the king was not trusting in the Lord, but was trusting in the strength of this human power, the Assyrians, and his own clever ingenuity in keeping them at bay and on his side, so to speak. It was a significant spiritual reform for Hezekiah to stop paying the payments for this protection from the Assyrians. The message that was being communicated through that action was, we're going to trust the Lord for our protection. He's our great protector and our provider. But verse 13 of 2 Kings 18 says, in the 14th year of King Hezekiah's reign, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, attacked all the fortified cities of Judah and captured them. So, stopping the payment of the tribute to the Assyrians, it was a wonderful gesture by Hezekiah, but having to live with the consequences of that action is a whole nother thing. For us, when we make the decision to stop sinning in some way and start following the Lord's commands, it can feel really empowering at first, knowing that we're doing the right thing, we're stepping out and finally breaking away in this way. But then the tempter comes. He shows up and he starts putting pressure on us, doesn't he, to go back to our old ways. And that can be a very difficult test. Will we stand firm and face the consequences that come with this new choice that we made, or are we going to buckle and give in and give up? 14 years after Hezekiah took the throne in Judah, the Assyrians, they come bill collecting. The mighty Assyrian army has begun to systematically lay siege to the fortified cities of Judah in response to their failure to make their tribute money payments. Verse 14. So Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent this message to the king of Assyria at Lachish. I have done wrong. Withdraw from me, and I will pay whatever you demand of me. The king of Assyria exacted from Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. So rather than trusting in the Lord, when the challenge came, Hezekiah, he capitulates. He buckles under the pressure. He gives in. I'm not sure we would really have fared any better given the circumstances, but this is what happened. He sends a letter of apology to the king of Assyria, who is at that very moment laying siege to one of Judah's most fortified cities, Lachish. And he writes, I've done wrong. Withdraw from me, and I will pay whatever you demand of me. And the Assyrian king specified a payment of 11 tons of silver and a ton of gold to be paid immediately. And this astronomical amount of money is going to be a challenge for Hezekiah to come up with. But he has no choice in the situation he's put himself in. In verse 15, so Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the temple of the Lord and in the treasuries of the royal palace. At this time, Hezekiah, king of Judah, stripped off the gold with which he had covered the doors and doorposts of the temple of the Lord and gave it to the king of Assyria. Hezekiah, he has to empty the treasuries of the temple and the palace to pay off the Assyrians. It's heartbreaking to watch this taking place, especially after this beautiful turnaround that has taken place under Hezekiah's leadership, in contrast to his father Ahaz's just pathetic leadership. The account in 2 Chronicles describes for us there how after Hezekiah became king, the people of Judah, they started bringing their tithes and their offerings to the temple again after years of neglecting the Lord's temple, demonstrating that the Lord was again important to them, significant in their life, and they were bringing all of this money in, and now those same offerings are being given away to the Assyrians. The account in 2 Chronicles describes how when Hezekiah first took the throne, he repaired the temple and overlaid the temple doors and frames with gold again, after his father Ahaz had stripped the gold off of the temple doors and door frames and to pay off the Assyrians. And now Hezekiah, he's having to do the same thing. It's gut-wrenching to see that he's going into the same situation that his father had been in, trying to pay off the enemy. It sounds like a reasonable thing to do in the moment, but it's not going to work. It only whets the appetite of the Assyrians. Hezekiah, he may not know it yet, but the Assyrians, they're not going away. As soon as they are finished mopping up at Lachish and the other surrounding fortified cities, they're going to head for the capital city of Jerusalem. And for us, we think, how the mighty have fallen in a way here, because Judah is headed right back into the same place that they had been before Hezekiah took power. They're paying tribute money to the enemy again. How did this happen? Hezekiah is no longer doing those things that he did at the beginning of his reign. He's not trusting in the Lord. He's not holding fast to the Lord. He's not following the Lord. He's not keeping the commands of the Lord right now. And what's the result? Trouble and failure. When we stray from these same principles that Hezekiah has strayed from, we can expect the same kind of results in our life too, trouble and failure. And I'm not saying that as a threat. Like, you know, if you don't do these things, you're going to have the hammer of God drop down on your life and you're going to face his judgment. When we're not trusting the Lord and following him and keeping his commands, we are taking ourselves out from under that protective umbrella of blessing and provision of his, aren't we? And we will reap the consequences that come from our choices and actions. Does God's judgment come? Sometimes. But just as often, it's just the natural road rash that comes from stupidity. The Lord doesn't have to step in and do anything. We're grinding ourselves on the pavement with our stupid choices and actions that we do, right? Sin brings trouble and complications into our life. Our sin leads to more sin. Our lies lead to more lies. Our indiscretions lead to more indiscretions. A clean and simple life can become very complicated very fast as the stupidity and foolishness of our choices and our actions, they begin to accumulate on each other. And we've all been the victim of these things in our life. I don't need to elaborate on it. I don't need to convince you of the truth of it. We've all lived it. We know this is true. We don't experience the peace of the Lord when we're not trusting in him. Now, what we're going to do now is we're going to jump over to chapter 20 of 2 Kings and look at what's believed by many scholars to be a flashback story that took place about this time before the events that are described in the second half of 2 Kings 18, which we'll look at this evening. So if you flip over to 2 Kings 20, verse 1, you can kind of imagine this is like one of those flashback things that we see in a television show, you know, where the screen kind of goes blurry for a moment, and it's got a little bit of a different colored background, and you're set into a new context. That's what we're looking at here. It's like, oh, we're going back in time for a moment. And it says, in those days, in the days that we have just been talking about, Hezekiah became ill and was at the point of death. The prophet Isaiah, son of Amos, went to him and said, this is what the Lord says, put your house in order because you're going to die. you will not recover. He all of a sudden becomes very ill. He's at the point of death, and the Lord, he sends the prophet Isaiah, yeah, the prophet Isaiah, the one who wrote the book of Isaiah in our Bible, that Isaiah. And he tells him, put your house in order, because you're not going to make it. You're going to die. You will not recover from this illness. Can you imagine getting a message like that from the prophet of God? Are you ready to die? Now, we might say we are, philosophically speaking. But when the realness of our death is pressed upon us like it is here for Hezekiah, few of us would really say that we're ready for that. It's something that would shake us to our core, isn't it? Cause us to rethink everything about our life and everything that we've ever done and how we've spent every day. Hezekiah, he's a relatively young man. He's in his late 30s or very early 40s. Most think he's 39 at this point in his life. He's in the prime of life. He's in the middle of what would be considered his most productive years. Our death can come at any time. There's no guarantee about how long we'll live. Some of you have faced that reality before. Some of you maybe are facing that reality right this moment even. But we all, in a sense, from the moment after we're born, we are dying. An old sage said, the vast majority of people who died today expected to live a whole lot longer. One of the reasons that we're counseled to live every day like it's our last day is because today might be our last day. And that's the message that Hezekiah receives here. Verse 2, Hezekiah, he turned his face to the wall and he prayed to the Lord, remember, Lord, how I have walked before you faithfully and with wholehearted devotion and have done what is good in your eyes. And Hezekiah wept bitterly. I appreciate Hezekiah's honesty here. When he hears he's going to die, he doesn't say, oh, praise the Lord, I'm going to die. Bless God. It just makes me so happy. Instead, he pours his heart out to God in prayer, and he weeps bitterly. The Lord's not asking us to pretend that life doesn't hurt, that our hearts aren't broken, that we're not afraid and confused and angry and disappointed in life. You guys remember 1 Peter 5:7? Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. That Greek word translated into English as anxiety, it means worry, distress, cares, fears, apprehension, sadness. It touches the whole range of emotions that we can feel when things are not going the way we had hoped. And what are we told to do? Cast it on him. And how do we cast it on him? The same way Hezekiah is here, through prayer. We tell him and we release it to him, trusting him with it. And why are we to cast it on him? Because he cares for us. He cares for us. He loves us. Now on the surface here, Hezekiah's prayer, it might sound like he's making an attempt to convince the Lord that he's worthy of more life. I'm a good guy. I've done good stuff. It's not quite that simple. His prayer reflects the struggle that's going on in his heart as waves of emotions are washing over him as he tries to come to grips with this unexpected death sentence that he's just been given. The searching questions, they bubble to the surface. Why is this happening? What have I done to deserve this? Is there any hope for me? Lord, have mercy on me. I'm pleading for a miracle. That's really what we see expressed here. And in verse 4, it says, before Isaiah had left the middle court, the word of the Lord came to him, go back and tell Hezekiah, the ruler of my people, this is what the Lord, the God of your father David, says. I have heard your prayer and seen your tears. I will heal you. On the third day from now, you will go up to the temple of the Lord. I will add 15 years to your life, and I will deliver you and this city from the hand of the king of Assyria. I will defend this city for my sake and for the sake of my servant David. Then Isaiah said, prepare a poultice of figs. They did so and applied it to the boil, and he recovered. Wow. So before Isaiah had even left Hezekiah's house, the Lord responded to Hezekiah's prayer, and he gives Isaiah this message for the king. He tells him, I've heard your prayer, and I've seen your tears. I am going to heal you. In fact, in just 3 days, you're going to have enough strength to go up to the temple to worship. And I'm going to give you 15 more years of life, and I will deliver you in this city from the Assyrians. The mercy and the grace of the Lord. The Lord heard the cry of Hezekiah and he responded. The Lord is always listening for our cries. Psalm 33:18 says, but the eyes of the Lord are on those who fear him and on those whose hope is in his unfailing love. The Lord, he doesn't always answer our prayers in such dramatic fashion as he does here for Hezekiah. But he's always listening. And his heart is always toward his children. Verse 8, it says, Hezekiah had asked Isaiah, what will be the sign that the Lord will heal me and that I will go up to the temple of the Lord on the third day from now? And Isaiah answered, this is the Lord's sign to you, that the Lord will do what he has promised. Shall the shadow go forward 10 steps or shall it go back 10 steps? It's a simple matter for the shadow to go forward 10 steps, said Hezekiah. Rather, have it go back 10 steps. Then the prophet Isaiah called on the Lord, and the Lord made the shadow go back 10 steps that it had gone down on the stairway of Ahaz. Hezekiah, he asked the Lord to give him a sign to confirm what Isaiah said. I think it's funny that he even asked for a sign. If he'll just wait a few hours, he's going to know he's healed. But he wants this sign, and the Lord, he grants his request. The Lord is just so gracious to him. He gives him this sign of making the shadow on the stairs of the palace move in the opposite direction that it normally does for 10 steps. Now, some have read into this and believe that the Lord stopped the earth from rotating and cranked her back a few degrees and then started her back up again. It could have happened that way, but it didn't need to happen that way. It's highly unlikely that it happened that way. There are easier ways for God to have accomplished that sign for Hezekiah. And I just want to say, as kind of a side note on that, it's important that we not make the Bible say things that it doesn't really say. I don't know how the shadow moved in the palace that day, but it's more likely that it was a local, isolated event that occurred right there rather than it being a global event that was slamming the brakes on the whole earth, and it just wasn't necessary. How did it happen? I don't know. Nobody does. It doesn't tell us that. And it's best to just leave it as, I don't know. I just know that it happened. Now, regarding Hezekiah's request for a sign from God, asking for signs is not generally encouraged in the Bible, but we see on more than one occasion God pacifying his people with signs in the Bible. The Lord was under no obligation to give him a sign, but he agreed to do it for him. What does that mean? It just means that God's good. He's kind. He's gracious. He meets his people where they're at. That's what it means. The Lord doesn't want us to rely on signs, but that doesn't exclude him from ever giving you a sign. He might. So in closing, Hezekiah, he may have rolled over for the Assyrians for a moment, but the fight is far from over, as we'll discover this evening. Hezekiah and the people, they immediately begin fortifying the city of Jerusalem, preparing for the Assyrian assault. And there's a line from Shakespeare, and not because I read Shakespeare, but I pulled it out of a quote book, just so that you're not impressed with me. I only read a few lines of Shakespeare that were required of me in junior high school, and that's it. So I don't know anything about Shakespeare, really. But I think this line captures the effect that Hezekiah's illness had on him in his life. It says, "In sickness, let me not so much say, am I getting better of my pain, but am I getting better for it?" Hezekiah got better for his pain. His illness was instrumental in bringing him back to a place of trust in the Lord. Pain, sickness, terror can be instrumental, can't they, in bringing us back to trusting in the Lord when we have grown overconfident in ourselves, when we begin to forget how weak and little we really are. We can run into a wall. We can be told that we're going to die. We can be hurt in some way that we weren't expecting. And it brings us back, doesn't it? Wakes us up, gets our attention, slows us down. C.S. Lewis said pain is God's megaphone. God can use it to cut through all of the ambient noise and distractions of our life, can't he? And the wise person listens. Isaiah chapter 38, I want to flip over to Isaiah 38 for a moment, because is what we find in Isaiah chapter 38, beginning in verse 9, it's a passage of poetry written by Hezekiah that he wrote about this illness that he suffered and the effect that it had on his life. I want us to read that in closing this morning. Verse 9 says, "A writing of Hezekiah, king of Judah, after his illness and recovery." It says, "I said, in the prime of my life, must I go through the gates of death and be robbed of the rest of my years? I said, I will not again see the Lord himself in the land of the living. No longer will I look on my fellow man or be with those who now dwell in this world. Like a shepherd's tent, my house has been pulled down and taken from me. Like a weaver, I have rolled up my life, and he has cast me off from the loom. Day and night, you made an end of me. I waited patiently till dawn. But like a lion, he broke all my bones. Day and night, you made an end of me. I cried like a swift or thrush. I moaned like a mourning dove. My eyes grew weak as I looked to the heavens. I am being threatened. Lord, come to my aid. But what can I say? He has spoken to me, and he himself has done this. I will walk humbly all my years because of this anguish of my soul. Lord, by such things people live, and my spirit finds life in them too. You restored me to health and let me live. Surely it was for my benefit that I suffered such anguish. In your love, you kept me from the pit of destruction. You have put all my sins behind your back. For the grave cannot praise you. Death cannot sing your praise. Those who go down to the pit cannot hope for your faithfulness. The living, they praise you, as I am doing today. Parents tell their children about your faithfulness. The Lord will save me, and we will sing with stringed instruments all the days of our lives in the temple of the Lord.